You can never tell just what kind of movie you'll find Christopher Walken in next. His range of roles seems almost limitless. But one thing's for sure, though, that he'll manage to keep you mesmerized. In his latest film, called A Late Quartet, he plays Peter Mitchell, the cellist in a string quartet, who is going through an unexpected transition. The film opened last Friday at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Landmark Sunshine, and I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to speak with Christopher Walken again. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
Our original plan was to do this interview in studio before the film opened, but then Sandy intervened. Where were you?
Yum.
Where were you at the time?
Well, I live in Connecticut, and the storm was very big. I've been reading and watching, and apparently, I don't think I've lived in this area, and I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad to have you today. Have you ever played a musician before?
I played a rock musician back in the day, but no, I haven't.
But you've been a singer.
Well, I started in the show business and as, really in Broadway shows and the chorus. And so you have to sing and you have to dance and maybe be able to memorize a line, you know, that kind of thing.
And then you started memorizing more and more lines.
Yes, I was a dancer when I got my first acting job. I was in the chorus of a musical called Baker Street. And one of the other dancers said, you know, they're looking for this actor in this play, and why don't you go audition? And I did. And I got the job. Then I started getting parts.
So are you self-taught?
Well, once I started getting parts, I went to a number of teachers, including the Actors Studio. And I went with a wonderful man named Wynn Handman, who I think still teaches.
Mm-hmm.
But I started going around the Actors Studio because friends of mine were there, and there was a time when I went there, you know, a couple of times a week.
Now, musicians are also very physical, as actors are, but does it require a different mentality, do you think?
You know, I really don't know. I'd have no way of knowing that, but I think that one thing they certainly have in common, and which was important to me when I was thinking about the part, that they are performers. You know, that the element that doesn't get mentioned a lot of the time in their work, you know, there's their own discipline, there's the music and so on, but then there's the audience. And going in front of a bunch of people and having a particular amount of time to do what you do best, and you know, being ready to do that, and prepared, and up to it, and mentally, you know, enthusiastic. I think that's what I thought about most when I was playing this man who's a cellist,
mm-hmm.
and I've never had ability with an instrument. When I was a kid, I studied piano and guitar and all, but my hands just don't work, you know. I think you have to have certain gifts, you know, like in athletics.
But that's because you were behanded once.
Yeah, that's right. I did that play about the man who...
The behanding in Spokane.
Yes.
Well,
I just made a movie with the man who wrote that, Martin McDonagh, who also directed the movie. And it's with my good friend Sam Rockwell and a lot of other really terrific actors, called The Seven Psychopaths.
Yeah, that just came out. Have you known musicians? Were you able to talk to any of them about the experience of playing classical music?
Well, sure. And I've always been a big fan of classical music, you know, listening to it on the radio, and I have lots of collected music. Being, you know, being a fan and being able to do it are very different things. And I've followed classical music. And when we did this movie, we, of course, had to have a lot of practice, a lot of, I had a teacher, each of us had a teacher, a different one, and spent a lot of time. I would say I spent at least as much time getting passable on the movements, you know, simulating playing a cello. And I never got very good at it, but I got certain of the moves down, you know, the bow swings and certain hand shifts, and we all had to do that. Some of the actors got quite good. Phil Hoffman could actually, he could play by the time we were done. And likewise, Catherine Keener, she could actually do things. Mark Vanier, he was okay. I was the only one who really never got much good at it.
Now, a string quartet is an intimate group. Is a quartet like an ensemble of actors working in rep?
I would think so. You know, I don't know that world that well, and I did my best to find out, but still, the one I know best is the world of actors together. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the idea of the whole being bigger than the sum of its parts, I think is important to both those things, and being able to play together. You know, that word play is absolutely crucial, and it's a perfect description of what actors do. They get together and they play, and I think that's probably what people in a string quartet do also. You have to get along in order to play.
Well, the quartet here, the Fugue, is in its 25th anniversary season, so it's survived a lot more rehearsals, travel, and unspoken grievances than even the closest actor. Even Steppenwolf has never had an experience like that.
Sure. And the music that's played in the movie by the great Brentano quartet, the director, producer, writer of the movie, Yaron Silberman, one night gave us a treat, really, that you are not going to have very often. He had the Brentano quartet up into a very elegant room somewhere near Carnegie Hall, and they played this Beethoven piece for us, beginning to end, and there were maybe 10 or 12 of us. So that was a very unusual thing.
It's the Beethoven Opus 131, which, it's pointed out in the film, is played all the way through without any stops, any breaks, and that makes it particularly difficult.
Yes, they talk about that in the movie. He insisted that it be played without pause, and it creates a lot of additional problems for the people who play it.
Another problem that the movie points out is anyone in a top-tier quartet has the potential to be a star, but for the quartet to survive, they have to complement each other rather than to dominate. And that has to be rather difficult for a bunch of talented artists with egos, whether they're playing music or, again, working in a play.
Yeah, the equivalent of it in the theater world, as I've, you know, gone through theater companies and stock companies and so on, there are theater companies in the United States and particularly in Europe and Canada that have these really first-rate actors, superb actors, who simply decide to stay put. You know, if the theater is based in a town somewhere like Stratford, Ontario, or Minneapolis, or any number of places in Europe, they will just stay there. They've got a house. Their kids go to the same school regularly. They have a nice life, and they get to go and do great plays, sometimes two, three different parts in a week. I'm talking about repertory companies.
Mm-hmm.
you know, they have a wonderful life, and they're sometimes at the same company for 20, 30 years, and there's something to be said for that. I would think it's a little bit like some sort of academic life that's, you know, in a place like Harvard or Yale, where you have a house and you have a nice life and you go to work every day. There's something to be said for that.
I'm speaking with Christopher Walken, who stars as Peter Mitchell in a new film called The Late Quartet. It opened last Friday at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas in the Landmark Sunshine. And can you tell us a bit about your character, Peter Mitchell, what his role is in the group? Because he's older than the other players.
Yes, he had a quartet in the story. I had a quartet and basically retired from it 25 years earlier. And some friends of mine said, I think including my wife, said, you know, don't stop, start another quartet. And he got these three young people who he'd known and were students. And
now it's 25 years later.
He starts another business, you know, sort of late in life.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, you know, old enough to be their father. And he gets sick, and he's going to have to stop. And they have to deal with that, you know, like the idea of the quartet being that it's an organism, and when a part of it goes, you have to rethink everything.
Have you played a role before where the character is so conscious of his mortality?
Offhand, I couldn't say, I'm not sure that I ever played a character with a serious affliction.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to do much research into Parkinson's?
I did, and I had some wonderful people who worked with me. There was a wonderful lady who had been a dancer, and it had been, I wish I could remember her name. She's in the credits of the movie. She talked to me, and after half an hour, I said to her, "Well, I'm very glad you waited to tell me that you had Parkinson's, because I never would have noticed." You know, the way she handled herself, and there was nothing to me particularly noticeable about her that was different. And it was a great relief, because suddenly I thought, well, I don't really have to do anything. You know, if the movie says that I have this disease, that's enough. I don't really have to make it, you know, a point of it.
Well, it is early onset.
Yes.
There is a scene where
But she'd had it for 12 years.
Well, and was it drugs that allowed her
yes,
to keep from
medication,
shaking?
Medication, and there's also exercise and I suppose just simply learning to deal with something on a day-to-day way.
Well, there's a scene where Peter is in an exercise group of people with Parkinson's, and the instructor explains how Parkinson's makes someone draw everything in.
Yes.
We see how you suddenly realize what the real implications of the illness are without your even having to say a word. How do you prepare for a scene like that?
Well, in the case of that scene, I just sat there and listened. And I noticed when I saw the movie that I had my arms crossed. And I do that a couple of times in the movie, and I don't do that in life. I don't stand there with my arms crossed. And I really only noticed it when I watched the movie, but it was the right thing to do. It was that holding on to yourself or to the end of a table or, you know, having a grip on something to contain yourself. I hope that's not too simple-minded of me, but that's the way I looked at it.
Well, it's very effective, and there are quite a few scenes where you say a lot without uttering a word. There's one where you're listening to a recording of your late wife, who was a marvelous singer, and there's
Von Otter, yeah.
And there's such a loss and sadness in your face. Were you actually listening to that recording when you filmed the scene?
That's absolutely right. We sat, it was at night, they said, sit in that chair, and then they pointed the camera at me, and they played, the lady von Otter came and sang.
Sophie von Otter.
A day, and she did that song right in front of me, and they photographed her, you know, it was, and the music and she and everything was very beautiful. We shot that scene very quickly, and it was really, it just is what it is. It's me listening to this beautiful music and, you know, seeing my dead wife.
You have another scene where you give a speech to a class of younger cellists. You also teach, your character teaches, where you tell them about the time you met Pablo Casals and were so intimidated that you could hardly speak. But it's all about complimenting someone who doesn't feel he's done his best. Do you compliment other actors?
Well, sure. That's one of my favorite scenes, and it's because it's true, and also it's kind of funny, you know, the idea that me, Chris Walken, that I ever sat down and had a conversation with Pablo Casals. It was a lot of fun thinking about how to make that real, but the idea of that scene is that Casals, you know, he picked the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was positive.
He focused on the positive aspects.
He focused on what was good, not on what was mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an encourager, you know. I think that's the... and again, the relationship to what, for instance, directors do to actors... A director who encourages an actor can sometimes get the actor out of some sort of muddled place. And encouragement leads to enthusiasm, and enthusiasm is, you know, just a blessing.
Although we have seen some pretty great directors who didn't do that sort of thing, like Otto Preminger and others who seem to use that kind of... encouragement as a way of motivating their actors. Does it matter in the end? Doesn't it come down to you and what you bring to the performance?
No, I think that to be encouraged, I think all of us, but to be encouraged always is likely to have good results. There are these certain, you know, famously tyrannical directors, and they could make great movies, but I don't think I would care for that. I don't think that they would do me much good, because I'd kind of get my back up, and then, you know, it would be just not worth it.
Now, when you were watching the Brentano Quartet play in that special performance, were you watching them to also figure out how you were going to move yourself, how the group works together?
Oh, absolutely. I said to the director when it was over and we all said goodnight, I said to him, I'm almost sorry that I saw that, because now I'm so intimidated that there was no way that I was going to get close to the cellist that I'd been watching. I said to him, you're going to have to do a lot of tricks.
Mm-hmm. It's effective. In the end, we know that you're not a cellist, and that Mark Ivanier and Philip Seymour Hoffman don't really play piano. I mean, violin. Catherine Keener doesn't play viola. That you're acting at it, but you do it effectively enough.
Yes, I think we get fine with it.
Now, you mentioned these other films. Seven Psychopaths by Martin McDonagh, where not only Sam Rockwell, but also Colin Farrell and Woody Harrelson. And then, aren't you going to be in a thing called Stand-Up Guy soon with Al Pacino and Alan Arkin?
Yes.
That must have been a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. And that'll be in December, I think.
Who was the biggest cut-up on that set?
Well, we had a wonderful time. It really was a real... not only a pleasure, but a privilege. You know, we would get together and rehearse on our day off. You know, I think that's how much we enjoyed each other. And every week on our day off, we would sit together, and somebody would bring some food, and we would go over the next week's work. And it was a wonderful time. Sometimes movies can be, intense in the best way.
And sometimes I'm sure they could be really boring while you're sitting around waiting to come out and shoot the next scene.
They always, I mean, when I'm asked about what's, difficult about making movies, there's nothing difficult for me. I mean, it's difficult for the director. But the difficult part usually has something to do with location. If you're making a movie in the jungle, or on the top of a mountain, or, underwater, or... That's the hard part. Usually it's always something physical.
Now, the last time you were on the show, you were guest hosting.
Yes.
Do you miss being in the host spot where you got to ask all the questions?
I enjoyed that very much. I kept getting my notes out of order. And I don't know how you do that, but I had various guests, and I'd have the wrong notes for the wrong guests, and it got a little bit confusing.
I heard the show. You did just fine. By the way, the woman who helped you prepare for the role for the Parkinson's disease is Pamela Quinn.
Yes.
And she's listening to the show. She left a comment on our show page and told us how much she's enjoying this. And Christopher, thank you so much for being with us again. I hope to see you soon. Christopher Walken stars as Peter Mitchell in a new film called A Late Quartet, which opened last Friday at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Landmark Sunshine.
Thanks, Leonard.